Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to be doing a Star Trek podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Benjamin R. Harrison.
I'm the other host, Adam Pranica. Is this a Star Trek podcast anymore, Ben? It seems like it's mostly a children's program with dirty jokes.
I wonder if they started to get, like, demo information. And they were like, oh, a bunch of nine-year-olds are watching this show. Well, maybe we should try to write more for them.
Except when I was nine, I didn't ever want to watch age-appropriate programming. I always wanted to watch Batman or Speed or whatever, like when it was coming out. Like,
yeah.
Like I wanted to see movies and TV that were not appropriate.
I think Speed might have been the first rated R film I convinced my parents to let me see.
Speed was the first rated R film I snuck into.
Whoa.
Yeah. What a great first R-rated movie, by the way, also. Like, it's totally harmless.
It's so harmless.
It's inexplicably rated R.
Yeah.
Like, I guess the grossest part of that movie is in the tunnel when the light knocks that guy's head off.
Oh, spoiler alert.
What are you going to do, Ben? What are you going to do?
Did you ever, as like a college kid or whatever, have the experience of a couple of 12-year-old rascals coming up to you and asking you to buy R-rated movie tickets for them?
Never. That never happened to me. Though I remember asking others when I was that age.
I have had both the kid that wants me to buy them booze and the kid that wants me to get them the R-rated movie ticket, and I'm so down to do the R-rated movie ticket. I'm not down to do the booze.
Yeah, you don't go to jail for the movie ticket thing.
I mean, do you? I don't know. But
I think the one reason that kids don't ask me for stuff like that is because I don't look old enough to provide it.
I was in college, I think. Maybe just, I don't remember exactly what year this came out, but I went to see Kill Bill, and my friends were already in the theater, and so I was like by myself outside the theater buying tickets, and some kids were like, hey, dude. And I bought them the tickets, and then they happened to be going through the ticket line, you know, getting their tickets ripped at the same time as me. And the usher was like, are you guys here with somebody old enough? And they were like, and I was like, yep, that's me.
Wow.
I provided two forms of coverage for them.
You're a movie theater guardian angel.
Mm-hmm. And the usher definitely was wise.
You don't look wise.
But let it go. Let it happen.
Did you get the impression that Kill Bill would be these kids' first R-rated movie?
These were like little Manhattan kids, so
I don't know. Yeah.
I'm sure they've seen R-rated Real Life by the time they're sneaking into R-rated movies.
They passed a guy pooping in the middle of the street on their way to the theater.
You know Manhattan. Clearly. It's nothing but guys pooping in the middle of the street. That's what it's famous for.
Can you imagine if Kill Bill was your first R-rated movie?
Man.
I'm really glad that Speed was my first. That's the shallow end of the R-rated pool.
Yeah, that is that's not exactly expert mode.
Or even like if Kill Bill was your first Tarantino.
Yeah.
I'm really glad I started like linearly through that world. The Tarantino verse.
I'm going to say Pulp Fiction was my first Tarantino.
Yeah.
Well, you know, with the obvious exception of things that he had his hands on the script of,
right?
For example, Crimson Tide.
Exactly.
It is amazing to think about Tarantino
doing punch-ups on a Jerry Bruckheimer movie. Yeah.
Like, I would love to be a fly on the wall for that meeting.
Do you think the PA is like, so double the coke for this conference room or what? God,
yeah, it's. This is a conference room made out of coke. It's like it looks like an igloo.
You know, like when you go to a tavern and they'll have like the pool tables there, and instead of the little tiny cubes of chalk, they'll have like the big beehive of chalk. There's like those beehives of coke just all around the room.
Yeah. Speaking of substances, Adam. As we wound up our previous episode, which is now famous for our excellent impression of young Picard, you floated
the idea.
Is that
why we've lost half of our viewership?
Must be. you floated the idea of us getting shithouse drunk while reviewing an episode of this show. And A Fistful of Data's may be the one to do it for.
Are you proposing that we do just that, Ben?
Well, I'm wondering if you're prepared to do it if we decide to do it. I mean, like, this is such a unique episode in so many ways, and one way that it seems very unique to me is when I sit down to watch an episode of Star Trek. Of Star Trek The Next Generation to review it for this program, I'll usually fill up like a page and a half to an entire page of notes. I wrote 6 things down for this episode. I've literally filled up 6 lines on a piece of paper.
That leaves a lot of time for drinking.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if we just lean into this one being pretty loose, maybe... You know, maybe we'll fail, maybe we'll succeed, but it's probably a worthy experiment, right?
I think that's a great idea. I'm going to go grab a bottle and a couple of cans, bring it into Studio C, and then I'll be ready to get started with Season 6, Episode 8, A Fistful of Data's. Ben, I grabbed 2 cans, two Rainier Tallboys, a bottle of Roca Patron tequila, and a shot glass.
Dang.
So I'm going to. What are you drinking?
Yes, I am drinking Applejack and Coke.
That sounds delicious.
Fuck you. I was really tired and I wanted some caffeine. When I'm done with the caffeine, I'm just going to be drinking straight Applejack, which is a 40% alcohol, full spirit drink.
Do you have the bottle?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll slug some back with me because I'm going to drink some of this tequila and then we'll get into it.
All right. We're doing slugs?
Yeah.
Right. Ziggy zaggy, ziggy zaggy, oi, oi, oi.
Okay. Whew.
I think The episode starts with Picard doing some flute practice, and it's one of those like Picard can't get a moment of downtime type of scenes.
Yeah, he really needs to put a sock on the door, like even.
If Picard puts a sock on the door, who do people suspect he is boning down with?
Even mid-range hotels have do not disturb, you know, tags that you can put out there.
Oh, I was on this trip, man, and one of the hotels we stayed in did not have the tag. And, you know, we travel with film equipment. I'm occasionally leaving things that have like a walking around value of $50,000 in my room.
Yeah.
And I do not want the maid service coming in. Like, I'm not saying that the maids are going to steal. I just don't want anybody, not me, going anywhere near that stuff. And, it burned my toast every time somebody, every time I came back and, like, somebody had been in and done something.
My wife and I, many years ago, took a weekender down to Portland. And stayed in a fancy hotel. We wanted to treat ourselves. It was our anniversary. So we go down there. And this was a hotel of the level that had turndown service in the evening.
Right.
This was not something that I had ever experienced personally before. And so when we came back from whatever dinner or drinks that we went out for, I didn't think to put anything on the door. And so... when my wife and I
We're doing husband and wife things?
Yeah. There was a moment, there was a perfect moment, you could call it.
Mm-hmm.
A moment of pure enjoyment. That was the moment that the door opened. And my eyes met with a cleaning person with a knowing look. Who then quietly shut the door and left me to my embarrassment. I can only imagine.
Picard is playing a flute that's not going to make a mess on his chin. And
gross.
the doctor comes in. Data and Geordi come in. And I guess what's going on is the entrepreneur has showed up early for an assignment. And so they've got some time to kill before the ship that they're rendezvousing with comes in. And that's always a recipe for trouble. And Geordi and Data are going to do some experiment.
That would allow Data to act as an emergency backup in the event of a shipwide systems failure.
They want to turn him into a raid.
Yeah, exactly. One of those batteries that you keep under your desk and you plug your computer into.
Yeah.
In case the power goes out.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like that would be a workable solution. Like we've seen the computer core. It is really big.
Yeah, but Soong is working on a whole different level.
Yeah, that's true.
And they're not trying to have him do the whole ship, just certain parts and just in case, you know?
Yeah, this is something that I can get behind. You want a little bit of a fail-safe here.
It's possible we might even be able to run some secondary systems through Data.
It's a nice idea, but the captain really doesn't want to get into the details. He's like,
yes, I get the idea, Mr. LaForge. Thank you. Please proceed.
I don't care about the details. Get out of here.
It's sort of that thing where like he's given permission for a thing, but can't stop being asked for permission to do the thing that he's already given.
Already getting a little slurry there, buddy.
Yeah, oops. You know what I mean, though, right? Like he's given the crew permission to go about their business. Why are they asking him for further permission? Like, go ahead.
I think this is one of those things that happens in movies, but maybe not in real life.
Yeah.
I think that sometimes the way it happens in real life, if there's some event that my wife thinks we should both attend and I have a reason not to, and I manage to talk her into it, the conversation definitely lasts like 15 minutes longer than the moment at which she decides to be okay with me not going. You know?
Yeah.
But that's more like, we're cool, right? We're good? Yeah, we're good. Okay. Just so we're good. Like, we're not going to be not good 3 days from now, and I didn't know, right? You know?
No amount of yeah after asking are we good ever feels like a satisfying amount, though. That's the thing.
Yeah, it's frustrating. So then Worf comes in and he's like, hey, we should be doing some security drills, right? And Picard's like, no. I'm the
Picard's like, clearly I saw how you let Ferengi take over the ship last time.
Yeah.
Please do some drills.
Yeah. So Picard is much more the Denzel to Worf's Hackman in this scene.
Feels like the whole crew needs a kick in the ass.
Or a pat on the back, sir.
He's like, let's deal with the cook's heart attack first and the fucking flare-up in the kitchen, and then we'll do the drills. And Worf's like, all right, fine. Well, I'll do some, I'll like crawl around in the phaser banks and scrub them out. How about that?
Mr. Worf, is there some reason why you're trying to give yourself more work?
We have some downtime. Chill the fuck out.
Yeah. You got all this time. Why don't you take it, dude? You don't have to be working all the time. Just chill out like me. I'm laying back in the cut playing this flute. This is my only hobby. I live for this.
Yeah, he should be playing like a Bob Marley song on that flute.
Like, Worf's like, do you know Melota?
It's like trying to play Three Little Birds here, buddy. Smash cut to Worf walking back into his apartment and plopping himself down on one of the rare normal chairs he has in there. And Alexander being really excited to learn that Worf doesn't have work.
I can go.
Worf's one of those guys who has decorated an apartment because he never wants guests there. Like, there is only one very small normal couch. The rest of them are wildly uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It sends a message. And that message is, don't sit down.
He has one Barca lounger. He totally has the dad's chair.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Alexander's pretty pumped because this means they get to do the holodeck hang that he's been looking forward to. And he plops a cowboy hat down on Worf's head. And that is our cut to commercial. Or roll-in package or whatever.
This is the first of several Worf eyes to commercial that we get this ep. That means we drink, Ben.
Mm, yeah. Drink for every Worf eyes? I love it. Brittany's going to be so proud of us.
Yeah. Ben, I can't remember any point in which Alexander has stated an interest in the Old West. And yet here we are. It's the Back to the Future 3 problem. Like, why are we here? It's clearly an interest from the writer's room. It is clearly a wouldn't it be fun if type story. There's no reason for us to be here, and that's the problem. Like, fuck, at least set it up a little bit. Like downrange by a character.
In the Voyager series, one of the characters is really into like old timey serialized sci-fi. So they have like this kind of like Rick laser gun kind of character where it's all black and white and they're, you know, it's
Rick laser gun was my porn name, by the way.
And you know it's fun. It's like a fun thing. It's fun sets, fun characters, a fun original thing, and they build a world. And this is clearly like there's some downtime at one of the backlots fake Western towns, and we can use it if you want to. You know, and the writer's going like, oh, I got some ideas for that.
Oh, I love this. This is going to be so great. This is going to be as good as Back to the Future 3, my favorite Back to the Future. Said no one ever.
Look at this, Adam. The original title was The Good, the Bad, and the Klingon.
Hmm. Boy, wonder why they chose against that winner.
So the idea is that Alexander and Worf are gonna go have some fun times doing some holodeck. It's a video game. It's like Red Dead Redemption on the holodeck, and Worf is the sheriff, and Alexander is the deputy, and they're gonna have a little adventure, you know, trying to capture the fastest gun in the West or whatever.
He
sounded like Kermit for a second there.
Well, I'm a little drunk.
So far, this is a great point, and I'm really on the edge of my seat to see how you wrap it up.
I mean, you know.
Yeah.
This is not a visual atrocity, you know? Like, Worf looks good in a cowboy suit.
Alexander doesn't look in their cowboy suits.
Yeah, like they don't look dumb like they could easily look. You only get that feeling for a moment though before we devolve.
My love is a fever, long in jail for that which longer nurse the disease.
Geordi plugs a lamp cord into the side of Data's head in the engineering section. And that is what precipitates all of this, Adam.
They plug the jumper cables from Data's brains into the computer, and they're swapping information. They've set up the RAID array inside Data's brains.
Establishing computer link up.
And he starts glitching out a little bit.
Let's see what you can do with the secondary systems. Try gravitational control.
Initiating gravity.
I just feel like there is no time when Data and Geordi are doing something that sounds boring that doesn't mean Data and Geordi are doing something that is going to cause big problems.
And they frequently, whenever they have those problems, they don't tell anyone. They don't study what might have caused the problem. They just sort of disconnect the wires and go about their business doing something else.
It's the same inciting incident as the EPS conduits blew out in Cargo Bay 4 from a couple of episodes, you know?
Right.
The Shizum episode. Well, yeah, so this is one of those ones where it's like a slow burn. Like they have a little glitch, and it's not obvious the extent to which it has caused a problem, But the glitch happens, and it happens to coincide with Alexander like resetting the holodeck program because Worf beat it too quickly, essentially.
Yeah, like literally. Like Worf and Alexander walk into the saloon. They find the antagonist in there with his boots up on a table, slugging back whiskey, talking shit to Worf. And Worf is like, fuck you, man. I'm taking you to jail.
You are under arrest.
And basically, like, swings a chair around in a circle, takes everyone down, and basically ends the mission.
Yeah.
He's like, this is great. I love this.
Yeah, credits roll.
I would do this all the time. It's a little bit akin to his calisthenics, right? It's Western calisthenics is what he's doing. He's like, I could get behind this.
Yeah. Fun stuff. Like Worf is definitely in. He was a little uneasy at first because as they walked into town, there was a sex worker up on the balcony of one of the buildings, and Alexander let slip that Lieutenant Barclay had something to do with helping him program this.
How wildly inappropriate is that? First of all, Barclay should have his holodeck credentials removed entirely after
he shouldn't even
done.
Be able to go on the same deck as the holodecks,
and he definitely shouldn't be helping Alexander.
Yeah,
that's a terrible idea.
We've taken a lot of shit for jokes that we've made on this show over the years about the way this show puts its foot in this creepy area.
Yeah.
From time to time. This might be the creepiest time in the entire run of the show, and we are late in the series.
What I wish we got that we didn't was like the cut back to Worf and he's just shuddering.
And what's going on here seems pretty pervy, doesn't it?
Yeah, just like cut to commercial and one, like just a little moment in the like midst of the commercial. You know how they do that sometimes?
Yeah.
Worf like severing the head of a sleeping Barkley with with one of his knives, and then like it's never commented on. Barkley is never back on the show.
Worf silently like opens up a torpedo bay.
Yeah.
Places Barkley's
body.
Yeah, places Barkley's body inside, closes the lid. Sets auto shoot function. Like as tactical officer, like he could probably program that pretty easily. He could be sort of the Dexter of the Enterprise.
Oh yeah, like, he is in a perfect position to do all the murdering he wants.
Yeah. What's stopping him? Nothing is stopping him.
Honor, I think. I mean, he did murder that one Klingon, right?
Is there anything more honorable than murdering Barkley? It's practically a mercy killing.
Yeah, Barkley doesn't want this life that you're taking from him.
He's practically like placing your hands around his throat. He wants a way out. He just can't do it himself.
So they wind up... what do? They arrest the bad guy, and they are helped in this adventure by Counselor Troy, who has decided to join the game in some really distractingly good-looking leather pants.
She's got, like, mom leather pants. You know? They're really high-waisted.
I'm into that look, man.
Yeah, me too.
I say that Marina Sirtis basically steals the show in this episode. She is she's doing a whole different kind of acting from everybody else, chewing the scenery, basically once again making the case for I should be a much more prominent character.
Listen to you defend it. Alexander in this scene is like, I invited Counselor Troy. She loves Western stories. Oh, really? Ben, when you have to have dialogue defend your story choices instead of like a character's natural inclination, like you are in the weeds on your script, I think. And this was nearly unforgivable, I thought. Like, what's the reason Troy's there? Of course she likes Westerns. Let's tell everyone. Like, it's telling instead of showing. It made me so upset.
It would have been pretty great if he turned to Worf and said, I invited Counselor Troy. She likes chocolate and Westerns.
You know,
those two things. Those are the only things about her.
My child doesn't know anyone, and he knows that. How interesting would it have been if it was Beverly instead of Troy, if they have to use one of the female leads? And maybe Beverly has a thirst for killing, and that's why she likes Westerns.
I mean, Troy kind of does. She definitely fucks around with that rifle.
Yeah, but does she ever murder anyone?
I think she does.
Yeah. That's got to be fun, right?
I have been walking my wife to the ferry in the morning. She takes the ferry to work a lot.
Yeah?
And
the orange one?
We stop at a little... No, that's the Staten Island Ferry. There's a new blue and white one for Brooklyn. But we stop at this coffee shop that also sells potted plants and flowers. And in the window, there's a terracotta flower pot with a plant in it right now that is just like a cylinder with a pair of tits.
And oh, no.
I was looking at it today, the other day, and I was like... That's pretty much what we've been saying Troy is for an entire podcast now.
It's what we've been saying she is because that is the way she's been presented.
Exactly. I'm not saying I endorse that. I'm just saying this terracotta pot reminds me of the Troy of reality and not the Troy that I wish we really got.
Yeah, indeed. hey, Ben, I don't want to make your editing decisions for you, but I think I'm going to take another slug here, and maybe we go to interstitial.
Adam, what do you say we take a slug, and we'll play some music right after that, and then as we come back, we'll be recovering from the slug of booze.
Perfect.
I am the cutest of all. You will assist us. I am the cutest of all. You are all.
Ugh. You know what? I tried to take that shot Picard style. Like an overly filled glass and just a very big gulp. Whew. Giddy up.
You can't drink like Picard.
No one can. That was a shot too big. That's a shot that's bigger than I would like to take.
At some point in here, the doctor is getting ready to stage a play, and she ropes. She's trying to rope the captain into playing a small part, which is like one of those great throwaway scenes that's just like, the doctor is the only person who can get away with this, but she basically does something that is wildly insulting to the captain.
Yeah.
Like, he basically is trying to, like, say, no, 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 I can't do the play. Like, there's no way I can memorize a leading part.
Anyway, I'm not much of an actor.
And she's like, no, no, you're not the lead, buddy.
Yeah, you're the janitor.
I was such an insufferable only child, Adam, that when I did the play in middle school, I did the play 2 years in a row, and neither time was I the lead, but I basically, and I went to a small enough middle school that people who are willing to be in the play were valuable enough that they got to be in the play.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that worked out was the drama teacher kind of convincing me that my role was more important than it was.
Oh, no.
I think back on that and just, I hate my guts.
The one thing you don't want to do is give a middle schooler confidence at any point.
She had to cut a scene from my, I guess it was my eighth grade play, in which I had a lot more lines than my seventh grade play, because I didn't learn the lines because I thought I was such a big dog.
Oh, that you would just improvise?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. In my defense, though, like, any amount of reducing that play was probably a good idea, because I was cast as Agamemnon in Regarding Elektra, and the way they made me look like a Greek king was put dark makeup on me and dye my hair darker.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Ben.
Hashtag problematic, Adam.
Oh. I certainly hope that all visual evidence of this is gone.
Me too.
Please let there be no yearbook pictures.
Of this we pray.
That could severely compromise your political aspirations.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. In the woke future that I run for office in. I mean, Adam, I'm not running for office because I don't think straight white males deserve any more political power than they've already gotten.
Not only that, but do you think anyone gives a shit about anything anyone does when they run for office anymore? Forget it.
I've played the best parts in the biggest plays. Everybody talks about my skills as a middle school play performer.
People rave about my blackface. Rave about it.
Everybody thought I was very convincing as a Greek. I have Greek friends. Some of my best friends are Greek. They say the same thing.
Like a picture of him eating a giant gyro. I love the Greeks. But it's like a taco bowl, like with gyro meat inside.
People made a lot of fun of 2016. They said 2016 was the worst year. 2016 fought back, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to be dealing with 2016 for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, well, for as long as we live. which is sort of a sliding scale, I think, at this point. Seattle, man, not a great place to live over the last week.
No, you're in great circle territory, aren't you?
Every time I would pass a chain link fence, that scene from Terminator 2 would play in my mind. So needless to say, I avoided those fences.
Yeah, you don't want to be a crispy critter clinging to a fence.
Yeah, I avoided walking past playgrounds ringed with chain link fences.
I rewatched the most recent Terminator film recently because I needed bad movies to distract me on airplanes. And about 15 minutes in, I was like, oh, fuck, I've watched this before. And then like 30 minutes in, I was like, wait, have I? And then like for the rest of the movie, I was just like bouncing back and forth between those two convictions, which happens a lot with those Marvel superhero movies now, where I can't really remember which ones I've seen and which ones I haven't. I was like...
Yeah, and people are like smashing into each other, and you've lost count of how many buildings are blowing up.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm sure that the Golden Gate Bridge sustains some damage each time, but, like, whether it's a Marvel film or a new super... A new Terminator film, but, like, man, I was lost, and... I feel like it is such a shame that that happened to that franchise, because Terminator 2 is one of the great movies.
I wonder if it can ever be put back on the rails in the same way that Aliens is making that attempt, you know?
Yeah. I mean, Aliens never got so far off that it was... Like, the most recent two Terminator films are... hot fucking messes.
You think that they're worse than Aliens versus Predator?
I think of those as like sideline, semi-non-canonical movies, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I refuse to believe that they exist.
Yeah. I mean, like, and like, I'm all for like a crossover movie. Like, I think that.
Have you seen the TNG Aliens crossover comic that's coming?
No.
That's on the way.
That's fun. It's hard for me to imagine a world where Weyland-Yutani Corporation and the Federation coexist, though. So that should be some interesting canon development.
Yeah, I'm pumped for that.
Anyways.
We should just wrap up the episode in the next couple minutes and then just continue to riff on sci-fi movies.
Have you seen Predators? The Adrian Brody led Predator film?
Whatever happened to Adrian Brody?
I don't know. I saw him in the East Village one time walking around with a couple of buds.
Did you follow him into a nail salon?
No. This was much later in my career of seeing a famous in public. And I didn't do a creepy thing. But he was wearing like cargo shorts and like a Fox Racing t-shirt. And he was with a couple of total bros. And I was like, oh, what? Adrian Brody's a bro?
That seems impossible to me.
Dude, he's a bro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Tobey Maguire... Pussy Patrol bro, or like just sort of bro-ish, just standard issue bro?
Like, I, based on the garb he was wearing and the company he was keeping, I would surmise that Adrian Brody's favorite hang is either Buffalo Wild Wings or David and Buster's.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Do better, Adrian Brody.
I know. Like, how does he explain to his buddies what movies he's in? Because they're not seeing him, you know?
No. How do they know him, too?
Like, they didn't see the Darjeeling Limited.
What do they have to talk about?
They definitely saw Predators.
Yeah, that's it. Like, it's a Predator-based relationship.
No.
nodding, nodding. So the deal is the holodeck is the safeties are off and there is stuff from Data's head leaking into the computer all over the ship, and there is stuff from the Old West leaking into Data. So Data's like walking around doing Data stuff and talking about y'all and
so he's spitting into bushes and stuff.
Right, yeah, he definitely like hawks a loogie into a potted plant in the observation land, which is fun. But what's not fun is that like Worf is catching bullets in the holodeck and they're actually going in.
Yeah. It's weird, like we know Data can hold 18,000 thoughts in his head at once. I mean, he said so when he kisses Jenna.
Right.
Like, yet these are the only two thoughts that cross in midair, like the Western theme holodeck and Data's cat food choices. It's weird.
You just sit tight. We'll have this all fixed up in time for supper.
I mean, they do have fun with this.
It takes all of Frakes' strength not to look into camera after that before turning away.
I feel like the writers have been given a task, and they, with this episode, are presently where we are with our episode, which is like, fuck it, let's just have fun with this one.
I guess, yeah, I mean, what Ron Moore said about the last episode, which is like, it's turning it into a challenge that he has to take, like almost as if there's no choice in the matter. Like, this is the story we're doing. We've got to make the best of the circumstance. Like, it feels like a dutiful effort here versus, I don't know, like, what other way is this show made?
This episode, I feel like, winds up being super influential on Deep Space Nine and Voyager.
Yeah.
Both of which really lean on holodeck hijinks as a premise. And, like, aside from, I guess, the Moriarty episode, which was a much more fun way of the holodeck being dangerous than this, this is, I can't think of other episodes in the series that like, have that as the idea. But I feel like that's, like, those are, like, the Lwaxana episodes of the future, right? Like, it's like once a season we've got to have the holodeck turn into a super dangerous place.
I feel like the holodeck's usage on this show is a total counterpoint to Star Trek as a place. Like it's a nesting doll inside Star Trek as a place that I wish didn't exist, because you can do holodeck on any show, a form of holodeck. You could make a show that was holodeck. Mm-hmm. I think Black Mirror in many ways is sort of holodeck as show.
Sort of what Quantum Leap is.
Yeah, but keep holodeck out of my fucking Star Trek, you know? I want my Applejack separate from my Dr. Pepper, you know what I'm saying?
I have some Dr. Pepper here. I could do that. I could see how that tastes.
Yeah, let's do it. We don't care if we live or die anymore.
Let's take a slug and we'll come back and we'll get to the... We'll get to the end of this storyline, such as it is.
Okay.
All right. Slugging in 5, 4.
There's a countdown. Okay.
3, 2. You're getting low on this bottle, Adam.
Ugh. Okay.
I'm sure that my wife's friends will appreciate the backwash and the Applejack cocktails I mix for them next time we do that.
Well, you just run that through a bar strainer.
Mm.
Get all those floaters out.
All the teeth that have fallen off.
Applejack straight. I'm going to try it.
Applejack is good straight.
I've got Applejack. I should go get it in solidarity.
It's a...
I don't want to mix my Applejack and my tequila and my Rainier, though.
No.
That's a recipe for angry wife later.
That's a recipe for like a shootout at the OK Corral inside your stomach.
This is one of those days where my wife's going to come home from work and ask me what I did today. That I'm going to be so embarrassed to tell her about It's a really bad episode of Star Trek. I'm fucking hammered. It's going to be embarrassing.
There's like, no way I'm cooking dinner at this point.
We really got back to our embarrassed roots with this one.
This episode ends with a big gunfight. And at this point, Data has replaced all of the bad characters in this holodeck world, like the image of Data.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the rules that Troy sets up are we've got to finish the game. Like if we finish the game and the story is over, then the program will end, and at that point, like, our lives will no longer be in danger. But the end of this game is like a big, like, classic Old West gunfight in the center of town with the tumbleweed blowing across in between the two gunmen. And so they work out like a thing where, Marty McFly style, Worf has a way of defeating bullets that, nobody in this time period has ever thought of. But like, this could have been such a scary and interesting fight, right? Because what they're saying is that these bad guys have the capabilities and speed of Data. And this is like what we talked about in the last episode, right? Like, Data should be able to kick a ton of ass in a melee or in any kind of combat because he can move so much faster and he's so much more accurate.
This is the Neo versus Agent Smith problem.
It really is. And they really, like, don't do a lot with that as an idea.
This episode asks you to do so much. It asks you to care about Alexander's life. Because one of the Datas has kidnapped him. And it's a bad sign, I think, when you're rooting for him to die as a character. It asks you to believe that Worf can credibly do science. Which he does by, like, cracking open a communicator with a little pocket knife. I mean,
yeah, he turns a communicator into a personal shield, which is like, if that is possible.
Yeah, why don't they use that all the time?
Have been done a lot earlier.
That's amazing. Worf made a huge discovery that just lives on the holodeck now forever.
Worf is a genius.
It's like having Data as the bartender. Like, maybe we've slept on Worf for too long.
Yeah, maybe Worf and Geordi should switch jobs and see how that goes for a while.
As these Datas multiply, I couldn't help but think that he's just doing different Nick Cage impressions with all of them.
I'm a policeman. See my badge?
Like, this is not a knock on Brent Spiner. I mean, I think this is a specific acting challenge to act eight different ways in one episode. Yeah. But many of them are very Nick Cagey.
I'm a vampire. Kill me.
Adam, you are sticking your dick so far into my drunk Shimoda right now.
All the way up it. So
she's,
like,
got a great ass.
God, is there any impression that you have that isn't two grade levels above one of mine? God, it's so frustrating.
I think that was just because I got a lot louder than you, Adam.
Yeah, the key to a good Pacino is getting extremely loud.
Yeah. The day is saved. I guess they, like, finish the gunfight.
Yeah, Data's bullets bounce off of Worf's ersatz personal shielding.
What do you say we cut the chit-chat, a-hole?
Yeah. There's a fun little comedic beat with Brent Spiner as Old West saloon whore.
You're as handy with a shooting iron as you are with a woman's heart.
And
complete with a golden breast piece.
Yeah, breast loaf.
Yeah.
It was really like Back to the Future level breast loaf.
And like Troy said before, the program ends when it reaches its natural conclusion, sort of like a choose-your-own-adventure story. This is a concept that has never been articulated before, right? The idea that a program will end on its own.
Yeah. I mean, that's not really how the Moriarty thing was resolved.
That's what I'm saying. And also, if Barclay wrote this episode, do you think he had a different conclusion in mind between Worf and the main holodeck female lead? I think so.
It's all wrapped up. We got a scene of like Worf tucking.
You're just going to leave that one alone, aren't you, Ben?
I wasn't paying attention, Adam.
How dare you?
Let's take another slug. What do you say?
I thought you'd never ask. Okay. Oh. Are you going out of the bottle?
Yeah.
All right, I just did the bottle on that one. I had been pouring them into a glass. But
well, aren't you fancy?
Well, I thought I could regulate my dosage a little better, but now I just don't care.
Last shot is almost a redemption for the episode.
Oh, really?
Not quite. The thing that really could have redeemed it, in my opinion, is it is Enterprise flying off into the sunset over some planet. But what really could have made this episode like dear to my heart was if there had been a music cue right then, and it had been I Shot the Sheriff, Bob Marley.
What is the galactic equivalent of a tumbleweed? Because that's what I wanted to see roll across the screen as the Enterprise saunters off into the sunset.
Yeah, I guess like a meteoroid or something.
Yeah,
tumbling across the screen.
Nihilum.
Nihilum is far more than a tumbleweed, Adam.
Nihilum's back. That Nihilum cameo, though.
Oh man, Nihilum killed it in that.
They bring a little scout ship meets him at the end. Did you notice it was called the Biko?
Yeah, Steve Biko.
I wonder if the Biko and the Viko got confused a lot. Because you remember in Slickback 3, the kid's ship was named the Viko. Like, I bet the Biko's glad the Viko's out of the picture.
Yeah, when you're transmitting on subspace, you got to use the NATO alphabet.
Right.
What would you say?
Right.
Right. Biko or Bravo or Victor? Did you like this episode, Adam?
Ben, I enjoyed recording the pod about it. But this episode,
is something our viewers, Adam, have been saying from the beginning, is like, don't veto the bad ones.
Just do them drunk, they said. And so we have.
Here we are.
Much like Rascals, I think this episode diminishes us as people who enjoy Star Trek. And you know, like, this is a Patrick Stewart joint.
Right.
This is not I don't put this on him. Like, I don't think there's anything directorially that was garbage or sloppy about this.
That's the thing, right? Like, unlike Rascals, the directing is tight.
Yeah. I just honestly wish that these two episodes had never been made. And I think had they not been, the entire series is lifted as a result. When people talk about the low points of this series, these are the two episodes that they bring up.
Yeah,
and quite often.
I think that, like, maybe the thing that brings this episode, in my mind, the thing that brings this episode down maybe more than anything else, Adam, is that they never, like, the ship never goes into orbit around a planet in a way where somebody could ask Data to scan for life forms, and he could go, "Life forms, you precious little life forms. You know?
I took off my headphones, so just yell really loud when you're done with that. God damn you, Ben. How about you, Ben? Did you like this episode?
I did.
I just have no grasp of what you don't like anymore if you like these last two episodes.
I like the way Worf plays it.
I think
Michael Dorn really rises to the challenge of this episode.
He does great in this. And you know what sucks is like...
Marina Sirtis and Michael Dorn never get fun stuff to do.
Yeah.
And they got a real fun challenge. Like, it's not a good script, but it is a fun challenge as an actor. And I think that it is maybe illuminating of the kind of decisions that the people running the show were making, that they would throw one like this at Dorn and Sirtis, not recognizing the kind of talent they were bringing to the table. But they fucking, like, their two roles, they fucking knock out of the park.
I think too often, and this is not, I'm not Bontel blaming here, Ben, when I say this, but... but these actors are way too good to be spending so much time across from a child actor every time. Like, how often is Michael Dorn getting his own episode and it's with Alexander? How often is Deanna Troi getting her own episode but with, like, a child actor who's seeing an imaginary friend? Like...
too often,
can we,
man.
Can we just have them have adult problems and with adult counterpoints? Like,
well, there are adult problems that have to do with parenting that aren't this dumb.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, God, I'm excited for Dorn to inhabit this character the way he has. It's not his fault this episode, but I would like him to get into a rated R situation.
The scene at the end where
he's Mr.
making,
Doubtfire right now.
The scene at the end where he's making finger guns into the mirror, though, is like the most endearing shit that Worf has ever done. I love that. I love seeing a character like, I am alone. I am being 100% myself right now.
Yeah.
Like I am walking around with my underpants on because I am alone in the apartment. I am being my true, honest, unmasked self. And that may be the hardest character to play as an actor because, like, when we are interacting with other people, we're always putting on a mask, you know? Like, the way I interact with you is totally different from the way I interact with my wife or my colleagues, you know? Like, I say different things in different ways. And the like, Ben in his underpants in his apartment by himself may very well be putting on a cowboy hat and making finger guns at him. I'm not saying for sure because that's my private life and I'm not going to reveal that here on the podcast. I'm just saying it could happen.
I think you're right, Ben. The most challenging character to play very well may be ourselves.
Do you want to see if we have any P1s?
Oh, yeah. I think they're going to get what they pay for here.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we have a couple of priority one messages here, as it would happen.
Oh, yeah? Should we take a couple polls? I feel like it's been a while.
Oh, Jesus.
I feel like our P1's paid for this.
Yeah. Yeah, this bottle of booze brought to you by the Priority One message purchasers this week.
Purchasers.
Right, here we go.
This tequila is starting to taste great.
That's the Roca Patron. That's the good stuff.
It is.
Why didn't Northwest Tequila Fest come back for a sponsorship?
Because it isn't next year yet. Like, we did that last year. And when it comes back, I'm sure we'll do it again.
I would fucking love to do Northwest Tequila Fest again.
Dude, you should come out for Northwest Tequila Fest. Because that guy Devlin that runs it is fucking great. He loves our show, and it was a great hang.
I would love to drink some agave-based spirits.
When they book the dates, I'll let you know when that is. Maybe we can get you out here.
Yeah, baby. All right. Our first message.
We've now replayed the music bed for P1s like four times, and we haven't even done the first one.
Our first message is from Dwin. It's for a Garrido burrito. What? Surprise! Thanks for hooking me on this podcast and being the coolest slash drunkest Shimoda brother there is. My scarf stockpile wasn't enough for a leaning wall or a new Previa to replace your Ruthmobile. So this message will have to do. It's the gift of a warrior. Mm. You are the natural Jaeger of little brothers. Happy very early birthday.
Aww. You know, I haven't really thought about Jaeger being a younger brother. I always imagined the Jaeger being the older brother.
Mm.
But that's nice. That's a nice compliment.
I love it. I also love anybody who goes by the any moniker that incorporates burrito, because that's my favorite food.
I was very concerned about you being overseas for so long, knowing how difficult tacos can occasionally be to get overseas.
Yeah.
And understanding completely how many we eat per week.
Right. I mean, I have a like.
What I'm
like,
saying is, to call someone a burrito is a great term of endearment.
Yes, it's almost as almost the same sentiment as when I call my wife my everything bagel.
Oh yeah, that's nice. To me, there is no bagel besides everything, Ben.
Oh really?
You can get rid of the other bagels. Everything's the only one I need.
I go with the onion bagel sometimes.
But everything has onion.
It does.
And but, more.
But sometimes I like that like densely oniony-ness of the onion bagel.
The simplicity of just the straight onion. I could
here's,
see that.
Here's what I'm going to say, Adam.
Give me your top three bagels, Ben.
The best bagel I have ever had was an onion bagel with scallion cream cheese.
That's nice. See, when you go with a variation on the cream cheese, you can really counterpoint the flavor of the bagel in
it
a fun way.
It was a stupendous bagel. The second best bagel is and the most consistently great bagel is the everything bagel.
Right.
Like cosine for sure. And I'm going to say
everything seasoning on a shitty bagel helps. I think that's part of it.
Yeah, it brings it up a notch.
Let me tell you something, Ben. Have you ever used everything bagel seasoning on food? For instance, Brussels sprouts?
No. That sounds great.
Me and my friends make everything bagel seasoned Brussels sprouts, and they are the bomb.
There's a fancy bar here in New York called Please Don't Tell, and they have a hot dog place in front called Criff Dogs.
Uh-huh.
And the Criff Dog, one of the famous Criff Dog hot dogs has like a cream cheese mixed with everything bagel seasoning topping.
Oh,
it's like a standard New York hot dog with cream cheese blended with everything bagel topping.
Oh,
which is really good.
Mix it with everything. I think it works.
Yeah. Third best bagel is obviously poppy seed bagel.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, man. I think part of it is you're in the bagel basket of the world, and it's hard for me to get a great bagel in Seattle. And so my list might be skewed.
I want you to visit Brooklyn with me, man, and we'll go get, like, I'm going to feed you a pumpernickel bagel that's going to, like, change your world.
Can't wait.
It's going to be you're going to be like, don't order me a pumpernickel bagel.
That's exactly what I would say.
They're just giving me a little packet of Philadelphia cream cheese that should cost 5 cents as the spread, and I have to do that with a plastic knife. fuck you, Ben. And then you're going to eat it and you're going to be like, all right, I see your point.
I can't wait to be proven wrong.
Do we have another priority one, Adam?
Sure do. Ben, this message is from a junior engineer who is most definitely not writing about bagels. It is for O Captain, my API captain. The message goes like this. You had me at initiating saucy separation. God damn it, I'm too drunk for this. Okay, take two. The message goes like this. You had me at initiating saucy separation. Or some other horrible pun. You're the Kevin to my Rashawn, the Coogee sweater to my Wesley.
Whoa.
The cheery, brainwashed Riker to my Randy as fuck Ro Laren.
What?
No one else's nuck is half as righteous as yours, and there's no one else with whom I'd rather make dick jokes. Happy birthday, Steve. I love you, Parmach Kai.
Damn.
Just when you think all of the reference comparisons had been done, a junior engineer drops in and gives us some science.
Yeah, that really blew a lot of situations right out of the water.
Saucy separation. I find when the temperature is too high on the stove, you'll get saucy separation. Ben, got to turn that down.
Yeah, but
maybe turn it up in the bedroom. You know what I'm saying?
The saucy is always connecting with the star drive in the bedroom when the temperature goes up.
Indeed.
Oh man, that might be the sexiest P1 we've ever had.
Yeah. Wow. Good job, junior engineer. Congratulations, Steve. Happy birthday.
Yeah.
Sounds like you got a good one in your junior engineer.
Dang.
Very that's knowing.
Like a, that's like a that's like an Ashley Judd level junior engineer. W/R/T hotness of P1.
There's a Star Trek knowledge here that I think if either of us started to get from our wives would be like, what happened? Like, what? Like, we're so used to over the years, both of our wives just not getting, not understanding, not watching. Like, if they started to drop references at this rate, I think we'd feel like something was up.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
This what did I do?
Yeah. I mean, this is like... the same thing, like if either of us showed up at home suddenly with a huge bouquet of flowers,
yeah,
it'd be like our wives would have the same like what are you trying to compensate for right now?
We're not saying that about a junior engineer. I want to make that clear. We're talking about ourselves right now.
Yeah. and basically how much we think Steve has hit the jackpot.
Yeah. Good one, Steve. Well, if you would like to announce just how good you have it, or tell the world just how good your significant other has it with you, going over to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron is a great way to do it, where personal messages are $100. And the occasional professional business advertisement style message is $200. They're a great way to both make the announcement of your choice and to keep up the ongoing production and imbibement of our podcast program. Thanks, guys.
Heaven help us if this is ever a television program.
Everyone's getting a CISO show, Ben. Maybe it's us. Maybe it's us someday. CISO programs are falling off the back of trucks.
Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean, with Manscaped.
This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it going to be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it, and I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures every time you send one to it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVS at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda.
Well, aside from myself,
mm-hmm.
Adam.
Yeah.
I wanted to give a special citation in scene chewing to one Mr. Spiner, comma Brent.
His face.
I acknowledged how great Michael Dorn and Marina Sirtis are in this episode already. I think that they took an acting plate of shit and turned it into a meal. Spiner is given a much easier job here, but man, he shows his virtuosity when he is playing the henchman of the Old West bad guy. He gets half a second takes when the camera cuts around to all the guys with guns in the big showdown in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And he just does so fucking much with them. He makes each one of those characters a different guy. It's great. It's so good. It's so Shimoda.
I think I would appreciate him more if he weren't clumping, you know?
If it wasn't the fatties fart too?
Oh, yes, my dear man. More beans.
Well, if it wasn't six of them, I could appreciate them individually in a way that they're deserving, you know? But instead, it's a trick. It's split screening interactions between them. It's a couple here and there's with card shuffling. We know Brent Spiner's a great actor, and I want to appreciate him, but I also want to appreciate him without the tricks. And it's hard to appreciate how good of an actor he is when they're doing this stuff. when they're clumping them up.
Well, so, I a little bit resent you shitting on my drunk Shimoda, Adam.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But
I didn't mean to shit on your Shimoda. I didn't mean to Shimoda shit, Ben.
But what's your Shimoda?
I am also giving my Shimoda to Data.
I'm a lieutenant in the police department. I'm in the middle of a homicide investigation. Try to get my prescription, please.
Well, I guess I'm giving it to the version that Brent Spiner plays of Nick Cage, who is inside the jail cell shuffling cards.
Have you ever been dragged to the sidewalk and beat until you pissed blood?
Very specifically, there is a moment where his sleeves are rolled up and he's doing the card shuffling trick, and he has got prodigious arm hair. Like, we have seen Data's bare arms before, and they do not look like this. It looks like he has coated his forearms in candle wax and then, like, dump them in a barrel of like in a dumpster out and back of a Supercuts. Like, like he is fully enrobed in forearm hair in a way that was like a choice, right?
He's got Robin Williams level forearm hair.
You know, like in Bloodsport, how they tape up their fists and then like dip the tape in glass to weaponize the fists. Like, that's what he did with his forearms. He just rolled it in a dustpan full of hair clippings. Yeah. That's what he's got.
Yeah. I'd love to see the ECU on his face as he's rolling his arm through that.
Yeah, because, God, you know that's gross, right? That's gross for any actor. And then you got to go through that. Like, the application's one thing, but the removal is quite another. So,
oh, yeah.
That can't be enjoyable. So
no.
I guess I'm giving it to Spiner for the forearm hair, but I guess the show for the choice, and also, I don't know.
Let's make it easy for listener Colin, who does our Shimoda,
sorry, Colin.
Our Shimoda lineup at the end of every season.
Yeah. Brent Spiner, right?
Yeah, I think it's Brent Spiner for both of us.
Yeah. Brent could easily say no to this, I feel like. It is such a minor thing that he chose to do. Like, you don't understand, man. Like, this, the sort of method I'm into is arm hair method. I'm just not going to be able to get into this character without it. I'm sure you understand. What do we have coming up in the next episode, Ben?
The next episode is Season 6, Episode 9, Quality of Life. Data risks Picard and Geordi's lives in order to protect a young living machine. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
This is the Exocomp episode, yeah?
Yeah, that's that Exocomp shit.
It's basically a poppet with a turkey baster on the front of it. A popple. Yeah, I remember this episode.
If you had had a veto, Adam, would you have deployed it upon
now,
this episode?
I feel like I would be in a refractory period after shooting two vetoes in a row. Like, I would have just been too tired. Too tired for a third, Ben.
Yeah, that's one thing that that really, I mean, I'm not trying to say anything about my inadequacy or whatever, but in movies when they roll over for seconds and thirds, I'm always like, who does that?
These are people who clearly don't enjoy sleep as much as I do. Well,
I wouldn't veto this either because I like the Exocomp episode.
Yeah.
They got fun uniforms, fun little gadgets.
It's all Exocomps all the time.
Yeah.
Well, if anyone out there has a problem with how we've done this episode, there's one way to tell us. By going on Twitter, using the hashtag GreatestGen, and saying, you guys are garbage. You did an episode drunk. You assholes. I'm on there as at Cut for Time. Ben is there as at Benjamin R. A-H-R. Your sober fingers, sure to not mistype those.
The other way to tell us is by going to drunkshimoda@gmail.com. The one way not to tell us what assholes we are is iTunes. If you thought this was great, if you If you have the kind of taste that says two idiots drinking way too much and recording a podcast is just what I want to listen to, go on iTunes and leave us a nice 5-star review.
Yeah.
Helps us raise the profile of the program.
It's true. There are people, even right now, Ben, that don't know about us. So if you feel like this might have been an emblematic episode to share with others, why don't you give the gift of Greatest Gen, maybe recommend it on your Overcast podcast application.
Oh, yeah, do maybe, the recommend on the Overcast. That's a big help.
Maybe spread it around on the Star Trek Reddit. Maybe tweet about it to a stranger.
Yeah.
Any number of ways will help spread the word.
It's the gift that keeps on taking, Adam. Go to the Facebook and Reddit pages of Greatest Gen to gab with other viewers. Really terrific communities, both of those. Lots of fun.
Our thanks to Dark Materia and Adam Ragusea, both of whom will not return our calls or emails after this.
And with that, we will be back at you. Next week.
Gross!
With another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. And an episode of The Greatest Generation that has little gadgets that come out of it depending on what tools we need for a given situation.
Oh, I've got to pee so bad, Ben. Are we done here?
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.